I'm Jackie Vetrano from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill.
And I'm Logan Bishop from Belmont University. You're listening to Higher Ed Social, part of the Connect EDU network. Welcome to the show. This week we've got a great guest, someone that I know very well, and I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, my name is John, and I'm from Texas, and I'm a transplant to Nashville, Tennessee. And I got a lovely wife named Sheila and two wonderful little kids and an old dog.
And an old dog.
An old dog.
Usually it's cats.
I got a great dog. You know what? I have a problem with people with cats, and that's just a whole other, podcast. Not a cat.
Well, you know,
do you have cats, both of you?
Yes.
Oh, that's so. Oh man.
Sorry.
That's all right. That's all right.
We hope you'll stick around though, because we really need to have a guest this week. So.
I'm here.
Okay. Good.
So, you're Belmont's associate provost and dean of students, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So, what kinds of things are you over here at Belmont?
Oh, goodness. Student conduct and the medical clinic and health services and fitness and recreation and the BEMA Student Center, disability services, students of concern. The way I explain it, this is kind of a cheesy response, but the other 153, housing, residence life. So there's 167 hours in every week, and the other 153 hours, the students are not in the classroom, right? They're in class about 15 hours a week. The other 153 hours, that's my classroom. And so it's their entire outside of the classroom experience.
I like that description. Yeah. That's pretty neat. Did you come up with that one, or did you learn it at, like, a conference?
No.
Gotta be honest.
That's ours. That is ours to the world.
I like it.
Back in 2009, a little group of Res Life folks, we all sat down and it was pretty cool. I thought I was the smartest kid in the room back then, but I was not.
Did you start out in Res Life?
No, I started off, golly, my first job in higher ed was as associate dean of students over student conduct, counseling center, and the medical clinic. That was my first job at 26 years old.
Wow.
So how did you slowly move over into student life?
I mean, that was my first gig. I was a high school teacher in Houston for a couple of years. And then I went to try to play music, and then, I transitioned directly into college. I went back to my alma mater where I had, it was a small private school in Texas where I'd gone to college, and, I had some great relationships with some former administrators, and they hired me back, and it's a pretty remarkable journey since then. So I've been in student life, student affairs since day one.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, usually people start off as an RD or something like that.
I know, man. It's such a bizarre trajectory. When I was the student body president as a senior, and my first year going into that position, just an extraordinary woman named Marilyn Fannin was named the vice president for student affairs. And she didn't have a lot of background in student affairs. She was just an extraordinary person and a great administrator. And so we kind of grew up together, and then I guess 5 or 6 years later, I circled back, and she took a chance on just a pretty raw green kid, and yeah, my whole life took a left turn at that point. It's pretty remarkable. Those kind of stories don't happen very often anymore.
Yeah, I was gonna say we talk a little bit about fate and those types of things on the show a lot, about how that one person or that one first job like sets up your whole career, and it's pretty neat to hear.
Yeah,
you've had quite the journey just in all of the things that you've done. And we talked about this before we started recording, but your father was a homicide detective.
Yeah, my dad growing up was a homicide detective. And then my mom, she wasn't allowed to go to college. And so just a family thing that she grew up with, that women really didn't have any business going to college. And so my dad was always an encourage for her to get her education. And so he was a homicide detective. And then he always volunteered with the youth program at the large church we went to there in Houston. And That youth minister transitioned out, and really rather abruptly, he left the police department and became a youth minister. And my mom, at the age of 42, just gathered up all the courage she had. It's a pretty remarkable story. And she took one community college class down the street from us in Houston, where we grew up. And I think I was a freshman in high school, so I think we took geometry together or algebra together. Well, we took it together. And then she took one more class, and she ended up getting an associate's degree. And then she had a couple of professors that really encouraged her. So she kept going, and she ended up graduating with her PhD at 57. And then she got tenured at age 62. And now she's, 68 or 69. And she's a department chair of English, flies all over the world, teaches at Oxford, all over the place.
Wow.
So she's had this really extraordinary back half of her life. And now my dad, he went back to being a police officer, and now he is a criminal justice professor. So it's been a neat – we kind of grew up in a house where the normal paths and trajectories weren't like, who cares, just do the next fun, cool thing. And we really grew up in a house where you just say yes to everything because it's probably going to be awesome. If you bring that attitude to it, it's probably going to be pretty cool. And so that's just kind of how we chosen to live our life, and it's been pretty extraordinary.
That's amazing.
That's super fun. So does that mean you've done a lot of traveling in your life?
Oh, gosh, no. This is the first time I've ever lived out of Texas. I've lived in Texas half my life. And no, I've been pretty limited in my travel, actually. My mom's traveled way more cool places than me.
Well, you still have time to get on it, it sounds like.
I know.
You've taken some small steps.
I'm such a homebody. I love going to bed like at 9:30. It's my favorite thing.
I like, understand that feeling completely.
Easily the least cool podcast guest you guys will have this year. Super lame, but yeah.
Well,
because that's when I go to bed, so.
With a cat? Or
no.
Okay.
No.
Good for you.
She stays up much later. She's a party animal.
See, that's the problem. People personify cats. It's a whole thing.
People personify dogs.
Yeah, but they're incredible.
So, I remember the first time I heard about you. It was around orientation time in June. And everybody kept coming to me and saying, Logan, you have to go film our new dean of students. Like, he has this speech. And it's, like, so amazing. And I'm like, okay, it's a speech at orientation. How amazing can it be? So I was really busy last year at that time. I didn't get a chance to see you. But then I saw you at at Welcome Week. And you just – so I just want to, like, set the stage here, because literally it's on a stage. Usually when the dean of students comes out and does a speech, they do a little speech about Belmont cares about your students and, you know, we're – going to make sure the transition is good for you, and we know it's hard, and everybody just kind of sits there and waits for the next speaker because Tower Jam's coming soon and that's going to be more fun. You get up there and you pull out a guitar and you make this amazing speech about moments in life and how those moments in life changed you. And then you sang a song and everyone pulled out their cell phones. And there was this whole moment.
That's right.
I knew then that we had something special. I say this because I'm kind of curious, like, what made you want to do what you do now? Because when I watched that speech, I was moved. I remember it. I don't remember speeches from Welcome Week, because this is like the 11th one that I've been to. Like, but yours is the only one that's ever popped up in my mind because it was just that good. So no, what made you care about students as much as you do? And, you know, what really took you to where you are?
So I think that, I mean, working backwards, I really love people. And I really love, I think people are capable of so many extraordinary things. And I think the current environment, the last 3, 4, 5, 6 years, it's just this multitude of voices, probably more than that, probably more like 10 years, a decade or so. It's so many voices just reminding people what they aren't, what wrong is being done to them, why they can't be what they can be, and what it's just this flood of you're not enough. And so it was, and I was, I mean, I fell victim to that as well. And so, man, it was about 7 or 8 years ago. I was just kind of bebopping through life, and I got hit with my own mental health challenges in a way that I just didn't know. I had no experience with that. I had spent all my time on the other side of that fence, right? Hugging folks. I did death notifications for years, and I was on call all the time. And my dad was a SWAT hostage negotiator growing up. So I knew bad things happen. I'd had a ringside seat to some of that stuff. I'd even been like a, like part of SWAT trainings where I was the bad guy and they'd send me out and then the SWAT team would come get me. So I knew how all that worked, but what I didn't have was an inside empathetic perspective on that. And so, you know, I graduated with my PhD in 2010, thought I was done with school. I was just going to kind of bebop along this way. And suddenly this happened and it really kind of shape-shifted my whole, what I hope is the whole back half of my life. But then I started nickel and diamond counseling classes at where I was working there at Texas Tech University. And then I joined a crisis team, and the crisis team's responsible. What they did was, like, if the police show up to a homicide or a suicide or somebody's passed away, the police generally will work that scene homicide back, right? And that's not always right. The most, like, hospitable thing for grieving family members, right? And so this really remarkable man named Dr. Andy Young there in Lubbock, Texas, and he did it kind of as a ministry. He wanted to go spend time with widows and orphans. And so he drove for 10 years by himself, and he would just go along with cops and sit with people in their darkest hour. And then over time, he created a team. And so I joined that team. And that was really an important moment for me because, man, you can have all the education in the world and all of the empathy in the world and all this, the, you know, charts and graphs and spiritual answers. There's not a lot to say when you're hugging a mom whose child is dead in the next room, right? And that really was an important shift for me, that this job is less about student development and less about all the theories and less about the grad school. And it's really sitting with people at their hopes and dreams and at the very edge of their financial reach and the very edge of, I tried all this so my kids would have these opportunities, and then they land in our lap. And I just feel this profound sense of responsibility and a really profound sense of this honor that folks would look at you and say, I'm trusting you with the single most important thing in my life. And I just love people. And then I like public speaking. That's fun. And so and so you get those rare moments when you can combine the two. That's just fun. I remember saying, I'm going to take the most important moment and make that all about me right now. And I just want you all to sing an old 80s metal tune with me, which I love. So that was way more about me than it was them. But that last little moment, but ended up, that was just a fun lightning strike in a bottle kind of thing. And that was fun.
At least you owned it.
Hey, man, you don't get that many opportunities to be like, hey, everybody pull out your cell phone. We're gonna all sing together. But they did. That was the fun part. All those people knew all the old Poison song. And so that was kind of fun.
We have moments in life that just really connected there. Because you were talking about some really personal stuff.
And
we all have moments like that, and we all can relate. And I think you're right. I think that's one of those things that in higher ed sometimes that we don't do as well is make connections.
It's just the whole enterprise has become so transactional and so policy and so procedural. And man, these are folks' kids, right? And these are their dreams and their family trees and their lineage. And there's brothers and sisters out there, and they spent a lot of money and took time off of work. And if, you know, we forget that time off of work sometimes costs these families a lot of money and hourly wages and things. And so it's just such a global sacrifice just to be in that room. And I think it's important just to remind people, hey, like, we're all brothers and sisters and grandparents and moms and dads too. And we get it. Like, this is a big deal for everybody. Mm-hmm. And I wish everyone in higher ed would kind of just stop for a second and step back and just say, what are we, like, the main thing is we're for young men and women are going to transform the world we're in. And let's let them run, man.
So would you say that moment was one of your highlights? You mentioned earlier, well, I think before we started recording, that you are a little over 1 year into this job. So would that be one of your highlights from this year?
Yeah, I mean, that was pretty fun. I got a neat photo out of that one. That was a good time. I think the thing that's been the time I had with parents before that was pretty neat in the orientation. I was coming off a pretty, like, the move from Texas here to here was a mess. And then right when we got here, my wife's beloved grandmother passed away. So I mean, I had to turn around and fly back to the, I just spent all this time cutting ties and saying goodbye. And then I had to fly back. And my marriage was, it was just, things were tough, man. I wasn't being solid here. And so that speech to the parents was really more than just like a rant. Like, we all just, everybody need to like pick it up a little bit. And so I think that kind of took a life of its own. But I think some more authenticity from administrators is always good too. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think it's hard for some people, especially in higher leadership, whether it be in higher ed or not, to feel as though they can be more transparent about like life situations. Not to say that you have to tell everybody everything, but I think that leaders think they need to be like tough and strong, and you know, that's not always the case. That, you know, things are like, we're all people, like you mentioned, like things happen to everybody. So that's really neat.
My time training as a counselor, I think people are just desperate to know that they're not alone in some of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And the other strong truth is, I've worked at some universities. I've been really blessed to have leadership that allowed that. You know what I mean? That's a privilege beyond all other, man. I can look back at the leaders that I have now, the ones I had at Texas Tech and the schools before. They were just so great.
I feel like that's something that everyone needs to remember. And we've actually talked about this on the show with Dave Cameron. His word is always be human in everything that you do, 100% human. And to remember to be empathetic and to remember to be a person and understand that you're talking to a person.
That's right. That's right. And not an automatron.
That's right. And especially when you're talking to a student or you're talking to a faculty member or you're talking to an administrator or you're talking to a coworker, like, you have to remember that, you know, they are people, they have things that they're dealing with every day. Whether it's, you know, life stuff, whether it's, you know, work stuff, all of it is part of it, because nobody compartmentalizes themselves and are work me and off work me.
That's right.
We all carry a little baggage with us in all the things that we do. And I think the piece of being authentic is being human and just, you know, that's something I've learned in my years in higher ed, and even when I was working in other places, is that you've just got to treat people like people, understand that we all have circumstances, and that, you know, you can't judge each other, because if you do, then you start making assumptions that you shouldn't be making.
Right.
And that's never fun for anybody.
When I was working at the law school, this is one of those just lodge in your brain moments. I was working at the law school, and you know, they had such a great rotation of speakers from all over the world coming in to talk. And I'll never forget, I don't remember who the speaker was. I know he was very fancy, and like, it was a big to-do. And the student asked, what's the most important thing you would tell us as we're transitioning from student into becoming licensed attorneys? And he said, never forget, the world is very small and it's very round. So just be nice to everybody. And I just love that wisdom. Like, why not? Why would I waste any energy in a day being ugly to somebody or being less than authentic? And then in student life, man, most people most of the time don't call us because they're having a great day, right? It's because something tragic has happened or something tough is going on in their life. And it's probably like y'all's work, right? Nobody's like calling y'all, be like, I have another great news story to pass along to you. It's usually, you know, story management, right? That's hard. And so I always want to honor people when they call. I just, man, it takes a lot of courage to call the dean of students and be like, hey, I'm having some trouble, or my kid's in trouble. Yeah. But what a cool spot though, right? I mean, good grief. You get to sit at the nexus of somebody's darkest hour and say, let's get you to, I know where there's some light. Let's point you in that direction. Let's walk that way together. That's so cool, man. What a gift.
It is.
spoken like a true dog owner. I'm just gonna
Are cat people not empathetic? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, I'm just saying that's just what the research says. I'm sure there's some articles.
I would like to see this research you're talking about.
It's in just some of those journals, probably somewhere.
What's the phrase that goes around? Fake news? Is that what it is? Is that the phrase?
I use it properly? I think I can quote any research that I would like to these days. And it's all
yeah, I was going to say, you're almost a PhD, so you're allowed to, I guess, say
no,
that
he's,
kind of
he's already got a PhD. Well. He's working
on
his second. He's working on his second. Yeah.
I don't have a lot of friends. That's the other thing. I don't have a whole bunch of...
It sounds like you have a ton of friends. If you have multiple PhDs and you work in student life, I feel like you have a lot of friends.
I have the same, like, 7 friends I've had since I was, like, 2.
That's great.
I met, like, 3 more when I was in college, and that was awesome. Maybe 5 more. But no, I'm pretty blessed. I got good folks. What about y'all? I'm interested in y'all's interaction with student life people. Are they, like, generally annoying or nerds or, like... There was that movie. What was the movie? It was called like Save Something with Mandy Moore in it. And there was like a youth minister character. I mean, they were just super making fun of the dude. But I felt like that's how I pictured like Dina students. Like guys who are trying to be hit but not let it go a little bit. And I don't know. What y'all's picture in your mind of what that looks like?
In my first job, I worked at a community college and I was very close with the student life folks. We worked very closely together, just naturally. We just got along. And I would joke all the time that my coworker had a master's degree in bounce house babysitting because that's what she did.
I love it. Yes.
Bounce house babysitting and human knot untying, I think, is pretty much your areas of expertise, right?
That was my first doctorate, actually, was in that.
Is that what your current thesis is on?
My current thesis is on how to make the largest game of Twister. It's super good. It's awesome.
I can't wait to see the research.
Yeah, I'm actually writing it in crayon. It's awesome.
I thought you were going to say in Comic Sans.
Oh, yeah. No, there's this saint of a man named Rob Sherwin. He is a font, like, aficionado. He's a law professor back in Texas. Mm-hmm. And, man, you want to see that dude's, the top of his head pop off. Because when he saw Comic Sans, it was like the end of times. It was so phenomenal. It was just fantastic.
Well, Comic Sans is good for, like, maybe one thing. Like a kid's birthday party, maybe. But maybe not at a law school.
Right.
You know, like if I could think of one place, maybe we shouldn't use it. It would probably be a law school.
Just saying.
I mean, I agree. I work with designers every day and I have my own feelings about Comic Sans. But
it seems to be the most reviled font ever.
Papyrus is pretty bad.
The most used one.
Papyrus is pretty bad.
Why I have you two? What is Wingdings? What is that for?
Well, they're little symbols.
Like pre-emoji, right?
Yeah, it's pre-emoji emojis.
That is maybe the most millennial thing I've heard today.
What Wingdings is.
I know, but
I was around for Wingdings.
The emoji did not exist like 18 months ago. It wasn't a statement.
I will say I was in Barnes & Noble the other day, and I saw, and for the life of me, I can't remember what it was, but it was Sudoku, but it was emoji Sudoku.
How does that work?
That's what I said. So I opened the book, which I know is, like, illegal in Barnes & Noble, because that's basically, like, stealing, because if you don't buy the book, you can't open it. And what they do is they have 10 or 9 different, like, emoji. So you have, like, smiley face, heart eyes, sticking out tongue, like, whatever. And then they give you a sticker sheet of all of these emoji so that you can fill in the squares with these stickers. And they did it with like smiley faces, food, cars, like flags. Like it was crazy. And I can't remember what it was called. It was some sort of spin on emoji and Sudoku in one word. Sumoji, maybe.
I do this weird thing and I like to, it's kind of a weird thing, but it's, I like to hang out with humans. Like in person.
What is that? What's a human?
Yeah,
is that a new new technology that's coming out?
We do these three things. We like to talk, laugh, and just overall just hang out. And then we just go our separate ways. That's That's my I like to do in-person emojis. Is that a thing?
In-person emojis.
I think it's called emotion.
Those are just called emotions. I was gonna say.
You guys are blowing my mind right now. Stop.
I wonder what emoji means.
What does it mean?
Well, you know, everyone has a way of calming down. Maybe that's someone's way. I like coloring sometimes. That helps me focus when I need to.
Excellent.
Or calm down after a day. I mean, I'm the kind of person that has work nightmares where, like, I just relive something that happened all day if it was repetitive. Like coding, like I will dream of coding tonight if I don't do something because that's what I sat in front of my computer all day doing. Yep. So yeah, it's what it is, and we all have our ways of self-care.
We
I guess
all have our ways. There we go. That's right.
I like to run too, that's the other thing. So
did you just do this marathon that would just happen?
I did a half marathon because you know, I busted my back, so that's not gonna happen, the full marathon, for a while. So
well, congratulations on getting halfway there, man.
Yeah, it was nice.
That's a 50% accomplishment. That's outstanding.
It's about the only time that 50% is worth something.
Did you get a medal?
I did.
Then there you go.
It was my fifth medal.
You got half of a medal.
Yeah, they took it from him and just snapped it over their knee. Like, okay, here you go.
So great. You got half a medal. Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, well, you know. But it was good. I decided, though, that if I ever run a full marathon, it will not be in this city.
Yeah, there's lots of ups and downs. Yeah. Go to Texas and run them. They're just flat, man. For days and days and days, it's good.
Well, I think that's all the time we have for the show today.
That feels like a good inspirational note to end on. Run in Texas.
Run in Texas? Is that like that's like Beto's slogan, I think, huh?
Not that kind of run.
Oh, not that.
The other kind of run.
Are you a runner?
I am.
How far?
I've done 3 half marathons, but not all at the same time. So they don't count as like 1.5 marathons.
I'll count them. That's cool.
Thanks.
Can you add it in your book?
Thanks, John.
You can glue your half medals together and make one complete circle.
That feels great to me.
Doesn't that feel awesome? So why not the whole thing?
I don't want to dedicate that much of my time to one really long run. And I still get beer at the end, even if I run half of it.
And why do you not want to dedicate the whole time? I know that I'm leading you because I know what the answer is going
to
be.
The thought of waking up on a Saturday morning to go out for a like 18-mile long run or a 20-mile long run is not appealing to me.
Oh, I thought you were going to say because your cat would get angry.
No.
That's good.
I don't really have to run my life by her.
That makes you actually, you are in the top 1% of cat owners. I'm really proud of you.
Thanks.
That's outstanding.
She's here right now, but we're gonna share the headphones because that's, you know, what cat owners do, and I'll let you talk to her.
I guarantee y'all we're gonna get letters for this one.
I'm sure we will. And listeners, if you want to leave us a review just specifically about this episode and how much you love cats, specifically mine and Logan's cats, feel free.
I'm gonna need dog owners to kind of step up a little bit and just go ahead and put their hierarchy out there.
Well, we'll have to resort to Twitter as well. I'm going slowly through my sign-off, going through all the things I normally talk about. But, John, thank you so much, despite bullying me about having a cat. We really appreciate you being on the show with us this week. Maybe you'll run a half marathon next time we talk to you.
That's cool.
All right, never mind.
No, I'm going to go for it. Hey, y'all have a great week. I appreciate y'all.
Yeah, thank you so much. And listeners, you can head over to our website, highered.social. You can get links to all the cool stuff we have talked about today, maybe possibly a video or a photo of John playing guitar. We're not sure yet. You can subscribe to the show anywhere you find them. You can also subscribe right from our website. And as I mentioned, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or any other player that allows it. We love seeing that. You can find us on Twitter. We are at HES Podcast. Shoot us a tweet. We love talking to you, especially if you want to be on the show. Let us know. If you love cats, please tweet at us. If you love dogs, you can tweet at us. I'm not against dogs, just for the record. Just because I have a cat doesn't mean I don't like dogs.
I felt like that's what you said, but that's okay.
No. Thanks, as always, to Emma Haas and Mariah Barksdale for making the show as awesome as it is. Higher Ed Social is also part of the Connect EDU network, the first podcast network for higher ed. You can visit the website connectedu.network, where you can find some awesome shows pretty much anywhere you work on campus. You're going to find something great for you, and you can subscribe right from the website. Thanks again for listening, and have a great week. Logan, you like
I thought you. I thought you had a question.
I was so ready. I was like
you're
ready
to
for
bring
it.
The question, Thunder Dude.
And I heard an inhale and then there was a pause. Do it, Logan.
Because I heard your inhale.
I didn't inhale. I was just breathing normally. Would you like me to breathe normally? Deep breaths. You listen to my heart.